This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Here's my story, it's sad but true. It's about a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town. Keep away from a runaround sewer, yeah. My miss the lips and the smile on her face, the touch of her hand and this girl's one embrace. So if you don't wanna cry like I do, I keep away from a runaround sewer. Whoa.
Dion and Run Around Sue, you remember that? That goes back a long time. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We're running around this morning. We got so much going on. Keeps us on our feet. I am Paul Molloy, along with my partner, Big Ed Davis. Hey, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, October the 2nd. Yes, indeed. Away we go towards the end of the year. You know, we only got five more weeks from today till Election Day. Wow. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Christine McDaniel of the Mercatus Center, and we're going to talk to her about the longshore workers' strike and its disruption to store shelves across the United States, but also its possible effect on the elections. So stay tuned for that in just a little bit. And did you watch the debate last night, the vice presidential debate? J.D. Vance, Tim Walz went at it on CBS. It's going to be the only vice presidential conflict that they'll be doing. We will talk about all of that, how it went, who won, if anybody. So stay tuned for that. And a new homeless law is taking effect in Florida, and we're going to tell you all about it. Very, very interesting situation. And towards the end of our show, in our ultimate top 10, how about this? The top 10 safest cities to live in America. Indeed. So stay tuned for that. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Great haircut, great price. Andrew's Master Barbershop, by the way, they are now back to their regular hours, Tuesdays through Fridays, 9 to 6, and Saturdays, 9 to 2 p.m. Call first, guys, for your appointment, 727-733-3773. And Arbor Life Tree Service, whether it's tree enhancement, tree removal, do you have a lot of problems with trees since Helene? Well, I'll tell you what, Arbor Life is Tampa Bay's premier tree service. They do it all. I've used them. They are terrific. Call them today for a free estimate, 727-330-1999. So, we got so much going on. One of the things that obviously we got to worry about is what is going on overseas in the Mideast. And National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan took to the microphones to say that the Iranian missile attack on Israel was, quote, defeated and ineffective, unquote, and that the U.S. military coordinated with the Israeli Defense Forces to repel the strikes. Now, Iran launched nearly 200 ballistic missiles towards targets in Israel yesterday. And it's unbelievable. Their Iron Dome does a fantastic job of stopping most all of it. There were amazing pictures of those missiles coming in. And even you could see them being taken out. You know, it was almost like an eerie fireworks display when you were watching it. Just amazing what's going on. But boy, could things be any more provocative? Could things be any more tense? Is Israel going to attack the nuclear facility of Iran? I think it's in the cards. Now, Jake Sullivan said that no deaths were reported on the Israeli side. It seems hard to believe. I don't think they completely counted out that, but they say the White House is supposedly monitoring the reported death of a Palestinian civilian. The Pentagon says that the U.S. was involved in firing approximately 12 interceptor missiles. So we were somewhat involved in it. If you notice what we are saying, our spokesmen are saying, we will respond if U.S. People are hurt. But they're not necessarily saying we're going to respond if Israeli people are, you know. I mean, we're supposed to be, are we not supposed to have this ironclad agreement, supposedly, with Israel? Yeah, I just wonder exactly what we're going to do.
Well, in history past, an American president would usually step in and try to take control of the situation or try to defuse it. The problem is all these bombs that are going off happen to be after 4 p.m. Eastern time, and Biden is well past his day.
He's asleep.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So
we've got this thing, it's called appeasement. What a dirty word appeasement is. Appeasement has gotten us nowhere with Iran. They don't understand appeasement.
Iran understands only one thing, force.
Indeed, and appeasement is the same as cowardice in Iran. If you're an appeaser, you're a coward. That's what it seems to be anyway. So, you know, Israel, it's amazing what they have been able to accomplish so far. And Netanyahu, no matter what anybody says, comes off like a masterful leader. I've read where they're calling him something like the Winston Churchill of Israel right now, which is a positive comment.
I don't see his people complaining about him.
No, not right now. I mean, there's been lots of complaints about how he handled things, but not right now. Not right now. They've been taking it to Hezbollah, Hamas, mm-hmm. and now it looks like they're going to take it to Iran. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how much Biden or anybody in the Biden administration is in the know anymore. I don't think Netanyahu is relying on the United States for virtually anything right now. They're taking control, as they should, of this conflict themselves. They're the ones that are directly imperiled, so they're the ones that are doing it. I don't blame them in the least. I think they're doing a pretty good job of it.
I was wondering if there is a change, and I hope there isn't, at the presidency on November 6th. Does he have any say before his inaugural?
I know what you mean.
Inception there.
Well,
in January, does the incoming president have any say?
Well, first of all, Biden comes off as a lame duck, does he not? Ooh. Especially if Trump wins the election. But Biden is still the president, mm-hmm. and technically, let's face it, what has Biden got to lose between the time that he's going to leave office and the time of the election? In other words, he can kind of do whatever he wants because they can't get at him at that point. So he actually could do something for perhaps a little bit less political since he's on his way out the door. But who knows what he would do? I don't think it doesn't look like we're going to do much of anything. We keep turning the other cheek.
Yep.
You know, how many of our bases around the world have been, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But we'll see what happens. It's a cauldron in the Mideast right now, absolute cauldron. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, Christine McDaniel of the Mercatus Center is going to join us. We're going to talk about that longshore workers' strike and its possible effect not only on store shelves, but on the November election as well.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
For years, we've been telling you that Andrew's
Arborlife Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arborlife Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arborlife Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
If you've been listening to our Freedom Works radio show, you know I've been bragging for years about what I call the best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. Why do I say that? Well, because three generations of Sorace's worked there. Andrew, his daughter Candy, and now his grandson Michael. Expert haircutters, and at a super price as well. So give them a try, man. They're back to their regular hours, Mondays through Fridays, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 9 to 2. Andrew's Master Barbershop on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Back, Freedom Works. It's Wednesday. So the longshore workers strike, you know, with everything else going on with the debate and with the horrible situation going on over in the Mideast right now, we've got a big deal here with the longshore workers officially went on strike yesterday. The Biden administration affirming it will not use what's called the Taft-Hartley Act to intervene in the dock workers strike. Entering its second day, from Maine to Texas, we've got all kinds of ports that are at a standstill right now. Unionized dock workers at 36 East and Gulf Coast ports on strike amid the impasse in negotiations. So we've got, delighted to have back Christine McDaniel. She is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center. She's a former deputy assistant treasury secretary and senior trade economist in the White House Council of Economic Advisors. And we're going to talk with Christine about what is going on. Christine, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Thank you, Paul. Nice to be here.
It's our pleasure to have you. Boy, oh boy, what a time. Of course, there's never a good time when a port strike occurs, but 5 weeks before the election, I bet the Biden administration is kind of shaking right now about what's going on. Let me ask you right off the bat, do you sense, Christine, that this dock worker strike is going to go for a while?
Well, that's hard to say, and right now neither side is negotiating directly with each other. The one side says they're at the table ready, the U.S. Maritime Alliance, but the port employers and carriers. But then the ILA says they're not going to come to the table because they don't think that the alliance is really ready to negotiate in the way that the ILA wants, the union wants. So right now it's negotiating through press releases. That usually is the case in the beginning days of these things. But I'd say, give it a couple of weeks and we'll have a clearer idea of how long this is really going to go on.
Yeah, now this, the ILA, the International Long Workers Association, it represents about 85,000 dock workers. That's a lot of people. They don't want automation or too much more automation if possible. They're afraid that they're going to lose workers to automation. And yet I've heard from the other side that actually that is not the case, that automation is not going to actually end up in the cutting of jobs. These people might just move on to other positions at the ports. What say you about that?
Right. Well, I mean, look, there may be some jobs lost. There may be some jobs created. And then there may just be, some reshuffling around. But, with automation, technology, there are usually some jobs created and destroyed. But like the Maritime Alliance, they have made really clear for many years that they want to improve U.S. ports, the efficiency, the productivity of U.S. ports. If you look at this World Bank Index on port efficiency, U.S. ports are just not good. I mean, the most efficient port we have is Charleston, and that ranks about 53 out of about 400 ports. Most U.S. ports are way down in the bottom 10, 20, 30.
Wow.
So we are just not really, we don't have very productive or efficient ports. The Maritime Alliance wants to change that and improve the ports. And, you know, the union workers are afraid that they're going to lose their jobs.
And the other part of this situation is what the ILA is asking in salary. If I'm not mistaken, they want something like a 77% increase over like 6 years?
Yes, 77% increase they're asking for. The Maritime Alliance, at first they offered 40. That's now come up to, I understand, about 50%. My understanding is that the White House put some pressure on them. I don't know if that's the case. But so, you know, there is still about 20, 30 percentage points there difference that they've got to work through. And then, of course, there's automation on the table. And then a number of these ILA workers are nearing retirement age, and they are worried about their pension. So it also seems like that's another pillar to be negotiated.
Indeed. We're talking with Christine McDaniel. She is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center and former deputy assistant treasury secretary and senior trade economist in the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Christine, what industries will be affected quickly in a strike like this? Will it be grocery stores? Will it be auto industry? What say you about how this blanket strike is going to start affecting merchandise in this country?
Well, immediately, probably very little impact. Most retailers have been, you know, they're pretty set for the holiday already. Plus, the ILA has been threatening a strike for about a year now, and everybody has seen that. So they've been preparing for this, stocking up. So there's enough inventory to cushion most industries, especially retailers, for a while. But industries like agriculture, and then sort of the more just-in-time industries like auto parts and you know, even autos, they eventually, you know, they will feel the pinch. For instance, I was just looking at the data last night. U.S. poultry and pork, 60-70% of U.S. poultry pork exports use the East and Gulf Coast ports. So you've got, you know, they'll start to feel it pretty harshly. They can't easily divert that either. They could choose to fly out, but that's more expensive. Their profit margins already are pretty narrow. And then on the import side, for you know, fresh fruits and vegetables have to be diverted to the West Coast ports, and then autos. The autos and auto parts do rely pretty heavily on the East Gulf Coast ports. And then, you know, after 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, those car dealerships are going to start to, get pretty slim on their offering.
Yeah, indeed. So the food industry is what I was thinking about, because those are perishables. And you can only keep food for so long, right? I mean, they've got to... Does this mean that if I go to the grocery store in the next couple of weeks, you know, and I'm buying bananas and I'm buying vegetables and bread and everything, coffee, will I be spending more because of this strike right now within 2 weeks, or is it going to take more than that for me to start seeing the effect?
Well, it's going to, I mean, it will depend on a number of factors, but I mean, but yeah, we're probably already feeling some of that right now, right? This has already been priced in.
Mm-hmm.
So grocery stores have already a very slim profit margin. They're operating around 1-3% profit margin. So they don't have a lot to give there. You know, who will absorb these higher costs? It'll be the importers along through the supply chain, the grocery stores, and then the consumers. So it is very likely that consumers will absorb at least some of those higher costs, especially for the more perishable foods. But remember, just like we saw with COVID and supply chain problems there, what companies do is they'll spread the cost increase over everything. So everything increases just a little bit instead of just one thing increasing a lot.
Indeed.
So, yeah, we won't see any price decreases from this, but if anything, it will definitely be on the high side.
Yeah.
Upper side.
So that brings us to Joe Biden. He's in a bit of a sticky wicket. He has said he's not going to invoke the Taft-Hartley law, at least his administration is saying that. Now, for those of you that don't know much about the Taft-Hartley Act, that would force the striking longshoremen to return for a cooling-off period, and I don't remember exactly how long it would go. But they would have to, continue to negotiate, but have to return to their jobs. And yet Biden, who calls himself, obviously, you know, Union Joe or Blue Collar Joe, doesn't want to get involved in something like this, especially right around an election, I would guess, right?
Right. Yeah, I think that's about 60. I want to say 60 days, maybe 90. But
yeah.
Well, remember, though, President Biden did join the picket line. On the rail strike. So, but it's not clear he will do that now. You know, he's not running for office. It's election season. It's silly season. So who knows? It does seem though, from reports that the White House is putting pressure on the Maritime Alliance to try to increase their offer. You know, hence the wage increase offer from 40% to 50%, but it's not clear that they'll actually get really involved in terms of joining the picket line or forcing, you know, or hosting a negotiation. They probably don't want to get too near that because if anything, like we're just saying, it's going to lead to price increases, and they probably don't want to be seen too closely contributing to that.
Yeah, I found it. It's an 80-day cooling off period under Taft-Hartley.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Do you think, Christine, that there could be enough pressure just because, Kamala Harris might come over and try to nudge Joe and say, hey, Joe, I don't want to go into the election with this dock workers strike. It's going to make us look bad and maybe kind of force the issue? Or do you think they're just going to hope that maybe consumers don't feel the pinch before November the 5th or whatever?
Who knows? I mean,
the
head of the ILA, you know, with Mr. Daggett, I mean, he's pretty close with Trump, it turns out. So apparently they had a moment where they spoke a few years ago and Trump committed, you know, helping him no matter what. So
we're talking about we're talking about the union.
They'll be fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be fighting. Right, exactly. They might. You know, the parties might be fighting over, you know, who can help the ILA more. But on the other hand, you know, it's a very tricky line right now the union has, because they're also asking for, well, they're demanding no automation. And, you know, I mean, most people realize that, you know, everyone has to deal with change and automation in their job. You
yes.
know, why should... You know, these guys have special treatment. So it's still early days. It's going to depend on how willing these two parties are really to come to the table with each other. And frankly, you know, how public opinion sways.
Sure. Christine, my colleague Ed Davis has a thought or a question here.
Christine, I just wanted to say, you just said it right there. In the end, as long as it goes on or for however long it goes on, I don't think the union workers are going to get much sympathy from the American worker in the amount that they're making and the amount that they want to get.
Yeah, well, that's just the thing. I mean, when everyone else is really feeling the pinch of inflation,
right?
And who does have great job security? Who does have a great pension already lined up? Who does have the guarantee of no automation will ever affect me? I mean, you know, that's a nice gig if you can get it, but not many people have it. And the longer this goes on, the more people will, kind of come around to realizing that. And nobody likes to, you know, be the cause of inflation. So the longer this goes on, I think the more pressure the unions will have. Right now, they seem to be in the best spot in terms of, you know, it hasn't been a big effect yet. But on the other hand, since there hasn't been a big effect yet, it's not clear how much negotiating leverage they really have. So very early days, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Well, look at McDonald's workers wanted $20 an hour, and now all of a sudden we're getting kiosks.
It forces the issue sometimes, does it not? I mean, and they're making, and correct me if I'm wrong, Christine, isn't the average dock worker making close to $80,000 a year?
Well, yeah, and these guys, you know, I mean, they're men and women. When I say guys,
of course.
You know, but these guys, I mean, they work, you know, and so a lot of them are working, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, so they're getting overtime. You know, it is a taxing job, though, for sure. It's physical.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, nobody's putting a gun to their head, forcing them to work. I know they want the job security in terms of, you know, when shipping activity is down, then there's fewer hours for them. They don't like that instability. Again, a lot of Americans are out there saying, well, that's the reality we have to live with every day. I grew up, my dad was an electrician. There's no work. You know, we had to either not work or he had to leave and go look for it. So that's just sort of the reality of life.
Yes.
You know, why should this group get special treatment? It's not clear.
Really? Dare I ask you, Christine, to look into your crystal ball and tell us how long you think this strike may last?
I am the worst predictor.
I know. That's just an unfair question. But do you think it could possibly last through the year?
Oh, I would highly doubt that. I'm thinking weeks, not months.
Okay. I'm thinking November 4th.
November the 4th. Monday, November the 4th. You may be right about that. Christine, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Always learn something from you. Thank you so very much this morning for your time, and I look forward to our next chat.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
All right.
Christine, my God, did she say that the supermarkets only, the grocery only makes profit of about 1.5%?
It's 1.5% profit.
I thought they were price gouging us.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Well, if you listen to Kamala Harris, we're going to go after all the big grocery chains. Nothing like trying to suck whatever profit they're making out of them. That'll keep them open. Oh, my goodness. All right. Hey, we're going to take our break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk about that debate. And we're probably going to have the master barber himself to chat with us, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, yeah! Are you ready?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
If you've been listening to our Freedom Works radio show, you know I've been bragging for years about what I call the best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. Why do I say that? Well, because three generations of Sorace's worked there. Andrew, his daughter Candy, and now his grandson Michael. Expert haircutters, and at a super price as well. So give them a try, men. They're back to their regular hours, Mondays through Fridays, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 9 to 2. Andrew's Master Barbershop on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Arborlife Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arborlife Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arborlife Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday, and my goodness, that debate last night, very, very interesting. We've got the master barber himself. I can't think of a better guy to give us an objective critique of how the vice presidential debate on CBS went between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. Andrew, did you happen to stay awake and watch the entire debate?
No, you got that right, Paul.
Good.
It made me realize a lot of things.
Yeah.
I realized with those two moderators at CBS, believes in the DEI employment.
Yes.
Okay.
We had two women.
There's no question. That's right. They're both got to be DEI hires. There's no question about it.
Okay. Do you think they were?
All right.
Yeah. Do you think they were fair? Were they unbiased?
No, they weren't fair. They were biased as can be.
I think
they were trying to fact check old JD for everything he said.
I think things.
No,
I think things changed a bit after JD slammed her on the fact checking, and then you saw. Then they went after Tim Walz, and I was like, oh, okay.
Matter of fact,
but, you know,
go ahead.
What got me was how come they kept saying, well, Donald Trump said, or Donald Trump did. How come they didn't say Kamala did anything?
Yeah.
Or ask any questions about Kamala?
Well, here's the
Her name is.
Yes. You could call her the Camel Lady, if you'd like. The Camel Lady? Would that sound good? Camel Lady.
There you go.
Camel Lady Harris.
There you go.
Speaking about fact-checking, first of all, there was supposedly was going to be a rule that there was not going to be any fact-checking by the commentators. But here's the deal. CBS rule included leaving mics on for both candidates, no matter who was speaking. The outlet, however, reserved the right to turn the mics off if they felt it was warranted. So the two ladies, Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell from CBS, did mute the pair when Vance spoke up to complain that the moderators were trying to fact-check him on his remarks regarding illegal immigration in Springfield, Ohio. And here's what Vance said. The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio, are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border. It's a disgrace. After Vance and Walz both delivered responses regarding immigration, Brennan told viewers that Springfield, quote, does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status and temporary protected status. So Vance tried to take issue on the fact check, and they were trying to shut his mic down and talk over him. Do you remember that, Andrew?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't.
No, they had to let him go. They had to let him go because he's making his case.
So that's what I was going to ask. What do you guys think between the two of them? First of all, let me ask you this about about Tim Walz. How did, in your opinion, Andrew, how did Tim Walz come off?
Well, Tim Walz, I realize, is bipolar. You could tell by his eyes, okay? They all got the same symptom. I mean, let's face it, the guy admitted he's a knucklehead. And you know what? J.D. Vance showed how much class he had right there because he lied about his Tiananmen Square baloney, right?
Yes.
And Vance could have turned right around and says, you're lying like a rock. He didn't. He had total class and let him just make a fool of himself. I'm a knucklehead. You know, I shoot my mouth off. Perfect guy you need for a vice president. I don't know how the hell he got elected as a governor.
I felt sorry for him, but he was dodging the question so much, his head went under the dais. Did you notice that?
One commentator said...
He looked like a bobblehead.
It would have looked better if he...
He looked like a bobblehead.
One commentator said it would have looked better if he answered the question in Chinese.
Yes. I mean, he started talking about his job and his military record. He did not answer. To the credit of those two women, they forced him to try and answer it.
Mm.
And he just kind of stand. He was standing there holding his jockstrap.
Paul, yeah. Let me tell you something. J.D. Vance showed that he is a presidential material.
I thought
he
did.
There's no question about that.
I think everybody admits, even on the left, that J.D. Vance looked good doing this.
Well, what debate about you? When Trump first picked Vance, you weren't happy with it.
I was worried.
Yeah, what about now? Frankly. What about now?
I think J.D. Vance is coming off very well, and he's a very good debater. I still, you know, I thought politically, I thought that what's this, the black gentleman from South Carolina, Tim...
Yeah.
I thought he would he would be better because of the African American vote. Mm-hmm. You know, but having said that, I think J.D. Vance is doing a sterling job so far. I really do, and he's not afraid.
You know,
he's not afraid to take a hit.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go on any station and he'll take a hit and he'll respond.
You know, Waltz admitted he's a knucklehead, and he proved it when he said he's friends with the shooters.
That was a strange one.
Yeah.
Okay, he proved he's a knucklehead.
Yeah.
Anybody that votes for these people, we got to call them knuckleheads. That's their new names.
Yeah. And then what else was going on there? Did you notice that it looked like, if anybody remembers or watches the Nixon-Kennedy debates, they always said that Nixon looked like he was perspiring and he didn't have the makeup on like Kennedy did. So from a visual standpoint, he looked a little bit ruffled. Mm-hmm. I got the impression that Waltz looked like he was almost ready to have perspiration drip down
at the very beginning. I noticed how uncomfortable he was and nervous he was.
Yeah.
You could his breathing
he's a nervous
was heavy
to begin with.
Yeah, and then he settled in afterwards, but he was flat out nervous at the beginning.
You know,
go ahead, Andrew.
You know, Paul, I don't mean to change the subject, but here's one thing that's really getting me right now.
Okay.
Is that last week, Mr. Biden, there, President Biden, gave how many billions of dollars to Ukraine? Was it $12 billion or something more?
A lot. We've been dumping all kinds of money into Ukraine, yes.
I think over about $200 billion now.
Oh,
but wasn't it amazing when he says that we have no funds for everything that happened in the east with the storm?
Yeah, it depends upon what you're talking about when it comes to funds, right? They got all kinds of funds for what they want.
I mean, that's amazing. That should turn the people off with these people right there.
Are you
saying? We have no funds for the American people, but we can help everybody else out.
Okay.
I want to know how many countries are going to send us billions after this disaster.
Okay, so what specifically did Biden say about the disaster? You're talking about the hurricane, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what did Biden say about funding for that?
Well, they were saying that FEMA just doesn't have the funds.
He did?
Allotted to them, yes.
Okay, I didn't catch that one.
Well, I know the Red Cross is getting another $28 billion or something like that because they've been decimated in years past. So,
well, the Red Cross is a private organization, so they're not being funded by the government.
No, no. This had to do with FEMA.
Yeah, FEMA.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. It was FEMA.
Right. Yeah, FEMA. Yeah, FEMA. But so I missed this. Just so I understand, Biden is saying that the funding at FEMA is such that it's going to crimp what they can do for the victims of this.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
Wow.
But we can send billions and billions to every other country, right? This is proof that America is last. And if the people don't see that, there's something wrong with them.
And look how fast.
The other thing.
Look how fast migrants came over here and got a place to live.
Mm-hmm. No, they got everything, didn't they? But then now we got this port strike, okay? Isn't this beautiful? If we didn't depend on everybody else to supply the United States anymore, they couldn't even think about a strike, okay? But because we are so dependent on China and unloading their ships to take care of us here, they go on strike.
So do you have any sympathy at all for the longshore workers?
Hell no.
Okay. Yeah.
None whatsoever.
I don't think there's going to be much sympathy for them.
No.
Andrew, do you think that this strike, this longshore strike, could affect the election in 5 weeks from today, by the way?
Oh, of course. If people start having shortages of everything, they're going to blame it all on Biden and Waltz and Harris with China.
It's just another brick on the pile. It really is.
When you've got the
Middle East, that's escalating. Then you got this here at home escalating, with the longshoremen.
Go ahead. No, I was just
going to say.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say Trump is right about World War III being around the corner here, Paul. And again, their biggest thing last night was abortion, abortion, abortion. I'm so tired of hearing about abortion; it disgusts me.
Speaking of the Donald and how well going back to the debate, how well J.D. Vance came across, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of a lot of people, is there any possibility that Trump looked at this debate and go, my God, J.D. Vance did a heck of a job. He might even be a better debater than I am. Do you think that might cross
his mind? He is. I think he is.
I think they both were, to tell you the truth, because this, to me, this was refreshing to see two guys go at it, had differences, but at the end of the day, they shook hands.
Yes, they did.
There was no name calling. The only name calling that went on was Tim calling himself a knucklehead.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they shook hands and they even agreed. I agree with so-and-so.
Yeah.
It's like the old days, you know, that we could agree on and disagree. But we could find somewhere in between to get, hey, maybe I could use your idea and we can put my idea together and we can come up with one great idea.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Here's another.
That's a very good point.
Here's another thing. Did you happen to see the pictures of President Trump wading through the water in Georgia the other day? These people think he's the president now, because you know what? Where was Joe Biden while Donald Trump was wading through that water to try and help these people and see what was going on? He was sitting on the beach again. Well, and where was Kamala Harris? She's fundraising in California.
Yeah, but if he's sitting on the beach, he could wade in the water too, just like Trump.
No, I don't think he could swim. He'd sink, just like he's sinking as a president.
So,
go ahead.
Do you think that Biden, who's going to be a lame duck one way or the other, is going to get himself more involved in the strike, like the Taft-Hartley Act, which, of course, would force the longshore workers back for 80 days?
The only thing he's capable of doing is wearing a sandwich sign outside the fence. That's the only thing he's capable of doing, okay?
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Real quickly, I want to ask your opinion on how Israel is doing in their response to Iran.
I can't wait to see their response to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Ayatollah. He's hiding in his bunker, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
I think they're going to blow his turban right off his head underground.
I understand he's dressing as a woman. He's putting on a shawl.
He's identifying?
The only thing that it's that beard of his that just sticks out a little bit. But other than that, he's trying to pass off as a woman. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, Paul, everything that's going on is disgusting.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have no right even being in the positions they're in. They're both incompetent and incapable.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like you've been saying, Andrew, that the tide is now. We got 5 weeks from today for the election itself, although there are some places that they're actually doing early voting. But I think the tide is going to move, unless something, and something could change, but I think the tide's moving towards the Donald.
Yeah, Paul, there's no question about it, Paul. These things you hear and they're 1-2 points apart, there's no way in hell it can be, unless the American people are that stupid.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I'm not saying they're not, because there are a lot of them, and I run into a lot of them.
Oh, yeah,
so.
We all do. Yeah. Andrew,
but, the election is Trump's, I believe.
Okay.
My money's on Trump.
Sounds good. Andrew, it's always a pleasure to have you on, my friend. I look forward to talking with you on Friday.
You guys take care. Have a good day.
All right. The same to you, Andrew. All right. The Master Barber himself. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, a new homeless law taking effect here in Florida. We're going to tell you all about it.
She's simply...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
If you've been listening to our Freedom Works radio show, you know I've been bragging for years about what I call the best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. Why do I say that? Well, because three generations of Sorace's worked there. Andrew, his daughter Candy, and now his grandson Michael. Expert haircutters, and at a super price as well. So give them a try, men. They're back to their regular hours, Mondays through Fridays, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 9 to 2. Andrew's Master Barbershop on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza, just north of 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing,
to grinding and removal, you get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Segment Freedom Works on a Wednesday. Thank you so very much for being with us. Always love having you with us. However, we know you're busy, and if you cannot listen to us live, thanks to Big Ed, all of our shows are available to you if you go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com. O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. You click on that podcast button, and all our shows, that's got the most recent show at the top. You can listen at your leisure. You'll see who the guest is and the topic. You'll see what the top 10 is, everything. Bless Big Ed. OurFreedomWorks.com. So, a new Florida law prohibiting homeless people from sleeping outside went into effect yesterday, Ed. House Bill 1365 prohibits camping on streets, on sidewalks, and in parks. And local governments are required to offer temporary housing where individuals will be prohibited from using drugs. They will also be offered substance abuse and mental health treatment. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis says the law was, quote, absolutely the right balance to strike, adding that we want to make sure that we put public safety above all else. Now, people will be able to sue counties that do not stop public sleeping. But the law includes a three-month grace period before people can start suing county governments for allowing homeless people to stay on the streets. So apparently, Florida has about, the estimate is about 31,000 homeless people overall. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know if there's any particular place where there's a big homeless problem.
Well, we've got one here in Clearwater. It's not huge, but it's
right in downtown.
It's a pretty good wave. I'd say probably a couple hundred at least. You know, yeah.
Is that downtown Clearwater?
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends because they'll shift, go here to there and there to here and different places.
I see.
There's churches that offer the food, so they kind of stay within that area. My biggest problem is a lot of them do drugs. And we have, you know, the police are around all the time because they're rounding up some of them that have, you know, been caught doing them. But a lot of times you see these people on the corners with signs saying, you know, please help, hungry, whatever. And if you notice, wherever they're standing there asking for money, not far from there, within a block or so, is a liquor store.
That's
so they go directly from there right to the liquor store.
They don't ask you for a quarter for a cup of coffee.
If you try handing them food, they'll turn it away.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want food. They want cash.
Yes. Indeed. So this does take effect now, and we'll see how all of that plays out. All right. Before we get to our top 10, Ed, I want to talk about Charlie Hustle.
Yeah.
Pete Rose, who passed away. He died Monday night. He was 83 years old. Now, his cause of death has now been established. This is the coroner in Clark County, Nevada. He said, Pete's cause of death was determined as hypertensive and atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease and a significant condition of diabetes.
So he's hypertensive. He had hypertension.
Hypertension and diabetes.
And he had some sort of a cardiac thing going on.
Yeah.
Which was like probably high blood pressure.
High blood pressure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Pete Rose was one of the greatest players that ever put on a uniform.
You could say,
just say that straight out.
You could say that he got what he deserved. I don't think, after all that time and all that's been going on with baseball and the amount of money that's going through there, I think in the last few years of his life, they could have done something to put him in the Hall of Fame and let him rest in peace.
Yeah. Well, he's got more hits than anybody in the history of Major League Baseball.
I mean, was it ever proven
that
it was?
He admitted it.
Oh, he admitted
it? He bet on his own team.
Oh.
No, he was, he could be a pretty nasty guy as a human being sometimes, too.
Yeah.
He wasn't a sweet man, let's put it that way, but he was a great baseball player. Ty Cobb was the same way in some way. Not exactly the same, but Ty Cobb was not a likable guy, but he was one of the greatest players of all time. You know, he might have the highest batting average of anybody in the history of the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But Pete Rose was amazing. He was an all-star at four different positions.
Yeah.
So that's all you got to say. May he rest in peace. All right, Ed. Time for our top 10, my friend, and this is the top 10 safest cities in America. Mm. This comes to us from WalletHub, and WalletHub compared more than 180 cities across 41 key indicators of safety, ranging from traffic fatalities per capita, assaults per capita, to the unemployment rate and the percentage of the population that is uninsured, okay? Mm. So without further ado, top 10 safest cities, number 10. Scottsdale, Arizona, and it ranks very high, especially in home and community safety. Number 9, Burlington, Vermont. Burlington is ranking very high in financial safety. Number 10, all right? No, I should have said that they rank 10. Yeah, I'm sorry. I said it the wrong way.
My finger didn't listen to
my ears. Forgive me. I know. It's my fault. No, okay, you can roll on this one. Number 8. Hey, Yonkers, New York. Where's Yonkers, Ed?
Upper New York.
Okay.
Upstate.
Yonkers, New York. Listen to this, Ed. In home and community safety, they are fourth. Okay. Number 7. Casper, Wyoming. Good old Casper, Wyoming. That's where the friendly ghost came from. Did you know that? They're 11th in financial safety. Number 6. Portland, Maine. I've been to Portland, Maine. It's a beautiful city right on the water. They're number 2 in financial safety. All right. Number 5. You're very quick, Ed. You're too quick for your own good.
Trigger finger.
You've got a trigger finger. Okay. Number 5 is Warwick, Rhode Island. And they're 9th in home and community safety. Okay. Number 4. Well done, Ed. Gilbert, Arizona is number 4. And don't roll the drum, but they're 10th in home and community safety, and they're 14th in natural disaster risk. Okay, number 3. South Burlington, Vermont. We had Burlington, and number 3 is even safer. South Burlington, they're number 1 in financial safety.
Yeah.
Number 1. Wow, okay. Number 2. Columbia, Maryland. Good old Columbia, Maryland. They're first in home and community safety. Good for them. All right. You want to take a guess as to... I know you won't know the name of the city. But you want to guess what part of the country is...
Hey, in Vermont.
You're close.
Yeah.
It's next to Vermont. Mm. You want to guess another one? You know what's close to Vermont?
Maine.
That's a good one, too. It's Nashua, New Hampshire.
Mm.
Nashua... New Hampshire. Listen to this. By the way, it's a big paper industry area in Nashua. They are 8th in home and community safety, and they are 8th in financial safety. They happen to be 27th in natural disaster risk. All right. That's it, my friends. Thank you so very much for listening. We will be back on Friday. In the meantime, be safe out there, and remember, freedom works.
Been thinking about you, babe.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cammie.